Welcome to the Andy Staples Show. We have a very, very special guest, the reigning AFCA National Coach of the Year, Tom Allen of the Indiana Hoosiers. And Coach, does that sound weird? Does that sound crazy when you hear that out loud? I mean, it's only been a couple of months since you were doing an interview with Mike Krzyzewski where he said he wanted to play for you. Like, what's this last 6 months been like for you?
Unbelievable, really, truly. You just think about it and you have a chance to take a step back and take a deep breath and kind of digest everything that you've been through. You have such a crazy set of months leading up to the season, but we're going to have a season, not have a season. And then obviously it all unfolded the way it did. And then just the way things, you know, the way the kids responded and played the level that they played at and all those things that happened. And then the postseason, you know, accolades that our team got, our players got, our coaching staff got. So yeah, it's just been a whirlwind, but it's been awesome and just very blessed.
So now you've got a team where you've been on staff for the recruitment of the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And could you tell as you were recruiting these guys that you were building to a season like last season?
Oh, we believe so. We did. You know, you never know for sure how a young man's going to develop in your program. You project. Your recruiting is not an exact science, you know, and so you go through and you. But I thought we had some special guys. And I thought we had some guys that were talented, but also were great fits for what we were trying to build and the way we wanted to build this thing. And so, yeah, I was very excited. 2 years ago when these guys were all freshmen, redshirt freshmen. I knew that if we just could weather the storm and just continue to build and keep getting momentum, that we could have, you know, something special like we just did. I did. I thought we could, but you got to go do it on the field. And that's what we did.
I was listening to an interview with you from several months ago where you were talking about the composition of your team and ideally what you'd like to have. And you mentioned that you want to have as many players as possible from Indiana. And everybody says, well, I want to, you know, close my borders off and all that. But I was curious because the way you put it was, you know, you want people who are kind of invested naturally in what you're doing, who've grown up around it their whole lives. What does that mean having those guys? Because, you know, a lot of coaches would say, well, I just want to go out and get the most talented guys or the highest rated guys. What is it about having that mix of guys in there with the other folks you're getting from around the country to kind of say, hey, this is home?
Yeah. Well, I think that you use the word vested. I think there's just, it means something to you. You know, there's something bigger than just the fact that you play football in a Power Five conference in the Big Ten. It's your home, you know, and you have people that you represent, you know, every single day. And a lot of those people may be linked in with Indiana. And we're not a big state. You know, we don't numerically have a lot of just volume of players. And so, you know, we may never have numerically, you know, a huge number, but it's getting the right guys and the guys that want to be here. And like I said, I want as many from Indiana that want to be here and that are good enough to help us win in the Big Ten as possible. And, but then beyond that, then, you know, if we get to that point and we got, then I'm going to go wherever we got to get to find that same thing, guys that want to be here and that fit with us.
Well, and the fit with you is interesting because you have a clearly defined culture. It's, you know, watching you guys in the locker room after games, it's obvious. And a lot of coaches try to create that. They come up with slogans, they you know, do, but you guys have managed to do it organically. And you do have your slogan, which is love each other. But I'm curious, you know, how long did that take root? Like, when did you realize, okay, they're listening and they're buying into this?
Yeah, it didn't happen overnight. You know, there was some core guys or some key guys that I'd say bought in to LEO even year one as the DC, you know, on that side of the football, but wasn't the whole group. And it took time even during that year. And then I think, you know, first year as head coach and you got a core of guys and then year two as head coach, I still didn't feel like in either one of those 2 years that it had infested the whole team in the right way yet. Mm-hmm. And I think probably year three, you know, is when you started feeling that things were changing. And then obviously we started getting some of those key wins on the road that created the breakthrough, you know, for the whole program. So, yeah, I'd say probably took 3 years as head coach, fourth year overall being here before you really felt like that a large enough number of guys were bought in to the culture of Indiana football.
So going back to LEO, to love each other, this is a macho sport.
Yeah.
That's not always going to go over well on the first hearing with your big, tough football players. What made you believe that that is what you build a program around?
Well, just, you know, living it, seeing it, being a part of this. You know, I don't care what level you're at. How you build a team is the same, whether it's high school, college, NFL, it doesn't matter. And so I just felt like over time, the best teams that I was ever a part of, the special teams, loved each other. They cared about each other. And you can have a different phrase that you want to use to call it, but I just think it's the relationships. And that's the part that people miss. They heard the word love, and it kind of just, as soon as that was in there, it was kind of like, nah, you know. And so, yeah. I mean, like I said, I started saying that. I've been saying it every year I've been here. It wasn't like we changed the words, you know, 2 years, last couple of seasons. But because we started winning, then all of a sudden it started being, you know, viewed a different way. And I was criticized for it, you know, at the first. And, you know, even people were like, you know, hey, let's, you know, we need to be tough. Well, here's the thing. To me, when it truly is genuine love and it is from the heart and is pure, it is as deep and as strong and as powerful as anything on this earth. And that's the part people miss. And what they didn't understand was they missed the first two things I always said before that: accountability, toughness, and love. Those are the three pillars of our program. And it's branded with LEO, the phrase love each other. And so they missed the first two because they can't, when they know you love them and they know you care about them way bigger than the game of football, you can hold them to an even higher standard. They're going to be even tougher and they're going to play their tails off for you and the people around them. And that's what makes it special.
Well, and when you think about it, when you drill down, some of the toughest acts that we commit as human beings are out of love, are because of love. You know, you think about the husband who has to be there by his wife's side while she's dying of cancer, that sort of thing. That's one of the toughest things anybody will ever do. And you do it because of love. So like it is amazing how people can be kind of short-sighted at first, but now you've made it cool. Now you've made it cool to say we can love each other.
That's right. And that is part that makes it even more special, because it wasn't some catchy phrase that just stuck right away. It was something I believed in. I didn't care that people didn't understand. I didn't care that they criticized it. I just didn't care because I believed in it. And I knew that in time, if enough guys believed the same thing I did, and the coaches and everybody in this program, that eventually that we could take off. And because I just don't think you can separate that. I think it creates a special bond that in this sport of football, you have to have. There's too many people. In a place like Indiana, we got to have something different. We have to have something that causes us to be able to be as a football. We have to be the best team on the field, not the best individuals, but the best team. Because that's who wins the games, is the best team. So that's what I just knew in my heart, that we just had to stay the course. Earmuffs and blinders, that was for all that too. You know, block out all the criticism of that. Block out all the negativity. Everybody not believing in us, and just keep doing what you believe in.
We'll be right back after these words. So as you've gone, you know, because you've been probably at every level of the profession. You've been at underdog high schools, powerhouse high schools, underdog universities, powerhouse universities, that sort of thing. How have you stayed true to yourself? Because that's what, when you talk to players about you, guys who've been recruited by you, that they say you are genuine at all times. And that's kind of hard in an itinerant profession where, you know, one day you're at one school and then the next day you're at another school saying, this is the greatest place in the world. But sure, you just told me the last place was the greatest place in the world. How do you keep true to yourself when you're dealing with other people like that?
Yeah, I think the key is when it's about developing the person, you know. And yeah, there's no question. You know, you'd be at different schools. And how about this? In one calendar year, I was at three different schools. I had to file taxes in three different states in a 1 calendar year period. So I wore a different shirt into one school, three different shirts in 1 calendar year. How about that?
So wait, which three schools are this? Is this Ole Miss, USF, and
Drake? No, it was Drake, Arkansas State, and Ole Miss. So three different states. Okay, in one calendar year. And so I recruited the Dallas area. So I went into all those schools from Drake the first time, and then Arkansas State the second time, and then at Ole Miss the third time. And so you say, what separates? Well, you know what? It's when you're even in recruiting, it's relationship building. Okay. It's building trust. Now that's why I get when coaches leave and go, that makes it hard because you build, I mean, you don't build a relationship with the school, you build a relationship with people. And so that's where I think that I just have always been. And even if I was at high school level, you could go back and rewind, you know, talking to kids at that. I mean, it was the same passion. Why? Because I really believe that's what I was at that moment. That's where I was at. And my feet were grounded there. And I got a quote on a wall in my office at home. It says, wherever you are, be all there. Live to the hilt, whatever situation you believe to be the will of God. So wherever I was, I wanted to be all in, whether it was at Temple Heights High School, Ben Davis High School, you know, Lambeth University, Drake University, Ole Miss, Indiana, it didn't matter. And that's why I wanted to make the big time. You know, that old Frosty Weathering book from years ago, Make the Big Time Where You Are. I read that book and that impacted me. And that was at a small school in the West Coast. And that was like, man, that's how I want to live my life. I don't want to be 1 foot in the door, 1 foot out the door, trying to get the next job. I want to be where I am because that's what I was called to do. And I'm blessed to be there. And I'm going to be thinking about nothing else but helping that team be great. And that's how we tried to approach it every step along the way.
Well, as someone who set foot on the Temple Heights practice field doing the season preview story for the Tampa Tribune, about six years after you left for that powerhouse in Sefner Armwood High, it is amazing to see, because I mean, having been there, I see where you came from, and right. And you've told me the story about going down to Florida to become it was because you and your wife could both find jobs down there, right? Is that what happened?
That's exactly right. Yeah, we sent out all these resumes, and that was one of the schools that had a job for both my wife and I.
And there's for those who didn't grow up with coaches or teachers in the family, this is how it goes. My dad was. Both my parents were high school teachers and my dad coached, and that was the same thing. It's can you find two jobs either together or nearby? Is the only way you can do it.
Well, we only had one car, so we had to work at the same place. So
very nice. and you had to build that place. You mentioned Lambeth University before, and for those who don't know, this is a small NAIA school in West Tennessee, and you work there with Hugh Freeze. Hugh Freeze was the head coach at the time. How did he find you? And then how did he talk you into going to Lambeth, where the paychecks may or may not come every other Friday?
That's right. There's no guarantee. First of all, so I'm at Ben Davis High School and I'm the head coach there. And I get a text message from Hugh Freeze. Never heard of him before. He's a receivers coach at Ole Miss and he's coming to Indianapolis to recruit. We had three players that were bona fide power five type guys. And so he came to see him and that's when we met. So he's in my office and we're sitting down. And as we talk, you know, it's kind of one of those, you could just tell. I mean, he's a former high school coach. And I was a high school coach at the time. And I had a book on my desk called The Purpose Driven Life. And so that book kind of, he said, hey, you know, we talked about that book and obviously it's a faith-based book. And so that was a connection and a draw there. And so that's how we met. Well, I continued there at Ben Davis and he continued there at Ole Miss. And so then I made the jump to college. And so I was at Wabash for one full season. Well, at the end of that season, which was the 2007 season, their staff at Ole Miss was fired. And so, and our head coach at Drake Wabash had went to Drake. And so basically in that whole opportunity there, we were at the convention together and Coach Freeze was like, hey, we were at the FCA event that night. And he's like, I'm heading back to interview for another job. If I don't get it, I've been offered the head job at Lambeth University. He said, would you be interested in coming as my defensive coordinator? And I was like, well, I said, first of all, I never heard of Lambeth. And I said, where's it located? And so he said, Jackson, Tennessee. Well, I'd heard of Jackson, Mississippi. I'd never heard of Jackson, Tennessee. And so he's trying to explain it to me. But then he did tell me this. So this was pretty classic. So he said, but when you come to visit, he said, you're going to have the right glasses on. He said, you're going to have to see the future of what we're going to build there, because there's not much there right now. And he could have not been any more accurate. I mean, that place was, I mean, it's just unbelievable. I mean, it just, facilities were just nothing what you'd expect for college.
Well, and some of the stories I've heard from both of you guys, I mean, he tells a story about not being able to find enough helmets for practice.
Yeah. I mean, It was just, we didn't have a lot of resources, and we had some people supporting us that were allowed us to probably even function at all, you know, and it was a really small school and they were struggling financially. And see, I didn't even know any of that. And so, you know, I'm just young, trying to find my way. It was my first chance to be a DC in college. And like I said, I really didn't care where it was. You know, I told my wife, I said, hey, this is, and so we just kind of blind faith just went after an opportunity. And we kind of hit it off with Coach Freeze, and I liked his personality, and I liked what he was saying. I moved my whole family down there, you know, but yeah, I mean, we didn't get paid. You know that? I mean, it was crazy. And I still haven't got all my paychecks, but you know, it's just one of those things where you just, for the love of the game and the opportunity and people, and man, what an awesome opportunity we had. Great people there, great experiences, and man, memories for a lifetime.
Well, and that's the thing. One of your former players from there, Dominic Bowman, just got named the DB's coach at Marshall. I mean, what's that like when you, because you know where he came from, yeah, absolutely, and what he's doing now.
Well, I tell you what, I'm so proud of that guy, because here's the thing. He was one of the key leaders every place you go, you got, hey, these are key guys that helped change it. Because we went there, they weren't very good, you know, and the defense was really bad, giving up like 40 points a game the year before, 400 or 500 yards of offense and giving that up. And he was a safety. And he was already there, and he was a junior our first year there. And so Dom just was a big part because he believed. And he bought in, he busted his tail, and he created the change. And so to see him rise to the coaching profession and get his first, you know, Division I coaching job, man, I'm so proud of him, so happy for him. But it's just neat to see guys like that, you know, because I know what kind of character he's got. I know what kind of toughness he has mentally and physically, and just the way that he bought into a group of coaches that he didn't even know. And yeah, we did some special things. Yeah, we had an amazing season year two, and he was a part of all that. So I just think that, once again, it's always about the people. I say that here, I'll say it at Lambeau, I'll say it at Wabash, it doesn't matter. That's what makes it special.
Well, and that's the thing. Can you tell, like, when you meet a Stevie Scott, or when you meet a WAP, or when you meet a Michael Penix Jr., can you tell that's the kind of person who can help you create that culture?
Well, I think the meeting them, yes, is critical, but I think you have to get to know them more. I mean, I it's about asking the right questions, and I think from those responses, you can tell. You know, a guy like WAP, though, his personality is just so big and so, right. You know, he just kind of takes over the room. He's so lovable, you know, when you're first around him. You know, Stevie's a little quieter, you know, but Michael Penix had this quiet confidence that was just like obvious that this guy believed in his ability. And when he was going to be, you know, into something, I mean, he was all in. And so, yeah, they're all a little different in personality. But as I got to know each one of those guys, I'm like, man, these guys got a chance to come here and be special. And all three of them have been.
So Michael and your son Thomas, both season-ending injuries each of the last 2 years. How are they doing now? Because your son had just one of the worst injuries, the hip dislocation. Oof.
One of those where, like, when I walked out in the field, I was blown away. I was not what I was expecting to hear, that his hip was out of socket, you know. And so it – tough injury, very painful injury. He's doing great. He's working his tail off. He's got so much – resiliency and so much toughness and grit. I can't even believe it myself, but he's just, he's fighting and battling. He's going to be back, and he'll play this season. And I think he'll be ready for game one. And Michael Penix, same thing. He just continues to persevere and keep smiling. Doesn't get down, doesn't get discouraged. And it's easy to do that. I mean, especially when it's not this is multiple times for both of them. So I just feel like that it creates a grit though in you that nothing else can. So I think it's going to make them who they are. It's going to make them even more special as people and as players. And so they're on schedule. We've got great medical staff here that's working hard with them, and they're expected to have a full recovery and be full bore September 4th.
We'll be right back after this message from one of our lovely sponsors. So when I visited you in Bloomington last year, right before the pandemic started, we were talking about the idea of expectations, because it was something that the guys in your program hadn't really dealt with before. How do you think they handle that? Because obviously you were expected to have a good season and probably had a better season than anyone thought.
There's no question. And, you know, and like I said, I was asked those same questions and by you, as among other people, but I didn't back down from it. I believed in this team. I thought we could have a special season. And I'd say, you know, when you start, the way we did and the kind of win that we had over Penn State and the way that it happened. And, you know, it just shot so much confidence into our team. And then you just continue to build and build and build and build. And so I just, and I think our culture, you know, kind of because of all the uncertainty, all the negative, just all the stuff going on with the pandemic and all the other things that we had to deal with. I just think having a strong culture was huge, and it allowed us to kind of just, I look like a snowplow. You just kind of plowed right through all the junk because we had an anchor, we had a foundation, we had a great, strong culture. Our kids believed in what we were doing, and we had good players that believed in good, strong leadership. And so, and we were still young, and we still got a lot of guys we knew were going to be back the following year. So I just think that, yeah, I believed, but we had to go prove it on the field, and that's what we did. And so now you got to, you know, once again, you go through all that, you got another year coming up, and we're not backing down from expectations.
So maybe the biggest single coaching decision you had to make during the season last year was going for two against Penn State in overtime. How much of that was feel, and how much of that was analytics in the offseason trying to figure out what are the best situations for this? And how did that decision come to be?
Yeah, I think it was probably more feel on that one because, you know, we're at home. Oftentimes when you're at home, you know, you may be more, you're less likely to go for two that early. But our defense was fatigued. They'd been out there quite a bit. Our offense was getting hot. You know, they were doing, you know, just driven the length of the field, you know, went 75
twice.
Yards.
Yeah.
Scored. Yeah. So, I mean, that to me was huge. And then just that, you know, we had the 8th ranked team in the country, you know, with one play to go on the 3-yard line. And I'm just like, you know what? And I've been there. We had, you know, I've been other games. We've been super close and against some other really good teams and didn't finish. I'm like, you know what? I'm not, we're going out. And there was no hesitation. I knew as soon as they scored first, so that let me know what we had to do. And so as soon as they scored, I'm thinking, I didn't tell our staff yet, but I'm thinking we're going for two. And so obviously once we scored, I told them, I think after second down, that we were going for two when we score. And so, cause I just knew, and it just felt right. And I don't even think I even asked our analytics guy. We got a guy in the box to give me all the information. I just trusted my gut and believed in our guys, and they came through.
I know you probably worked those don't score situations with your offense for two decades, you know, from high school through college. And I'm sure there are a lot of players who, coach, how can you tell me not to score? When you work those now, after that game, do the players say, oh, I get why I'm not supposed to cross the goal line and give the offense
no
extra
question.
Time?
We got physical evidence of why this is so critical. And yeah, what an unbelievable series of events. When you just think about that whole game and how it finished. And it was, here's the, and I got it on a sheet right here, a little card. I'm a big 3x5 card. Here's what it says. Minute 47 to go, 4th and 21, ... incomplete pass. According to ESPN's win probability, Penn State had a 99.9% chance of winning the game. Indiana, 0.1%. A minute 42 on the clock, we drove 75 yards. And I just put ... after that, and you know the rest. And so I'm never going to forget that. And that to me is just an unbelievable, like you said, you know what happened in there. We let them score. We get the ball back. We drive down and score. But just even the execution of that play, like you said, we worked on that. Because you got to sell certain things, and you got to have a call, and you have a signal. And matter of fact, I will just be honest with you. So Kane, we knew what we had to do as a defensive staff.
Right.
And so I'm like, guys, we gotta let them score.
To let them score. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's like, coach, can we just try and get a takeaway first? I said, no, I can't. I'm not wasting any time. We spend a ton of time on create takeaways. And I said, no, we gotta let them score. And he's like, okay. You know, so, but you just don't want to let them score. I mean, you're just not wired that way as a defensive coach. It's like, that's the last thing you want to do. And so, but since we worked, our players knew. We signaled it in. They know exactly. Matter of fact, it's funny. You watch our players. They were cheering when he crossed the goal line because they knew that was our only chance that we had to let him
score.
But
they had to act a little bit on the front end, right?
Oh,
act
yeah. You
like
gotta,
they're
that's
trying.
The whole point. You got to act. Yeah. Like if you just stop, they'll know what's up, and they'll just stop. And so you got to execute a call. We had a signal. We signaled everything. We got a term for it. We execute. We move to it. You got to show like you're giving resistance, but you just don't tackle the guy, you know, and that's what we did. And so, and our guys are ready. Like if he gets to the 1-yard line and tries to stop, they know to knock him into the end zone, you know? So there's a lot of things that go into that because obviously if we don't get the ball back, if they don't score, we don't have really probably a chance to win the game.
And Kane Womack, who's now the head coach of South Alabama, I bet he's got that let him score.
Oh yeah.
He's putting that in spring practice. Oh yeah. They're installing that this spring.
No doubt.
Coach, what's next? I mean, you guys have built upon some success here. again, more expectations, but it seems like you have a culture that, that can kind of endure. So what do you want next? Because you said you're never backing down from any of this stuff.
Sure.
Well, what's the next step for Indiana football?
Yeah, to me, it's win the Big Ten, you know, and we've talked to our team about that. And hey, about this, I've never really let them ever talk about that. When I first got here, we used to always break it down on Big Ten chance before I was the head coach. And it always bugged me because I knew it was hollow words. You know, I say that very cautiously and I just never liked that. And so we didn't talk about it, you know. And so because you have to earn the right to have those expectations. And so, you know, and because of where we are and what happened this past season and everything, that's next to me. And so and our players understand that we had a special meeting about this and that I've empowered them to even break it down on that phrase again. And we've never done it since I've been here because that is the next step. And so I'm not backing down from that because we're going to say, hey, we want to go finish second again. I mean, you're not going to, Big Ten runner up on two. You don't say that, you know, so it's a Big Ten chance, right? And so as a man thinks, so is he. And so that's the expectation. I get it. It's hard. And we play a tough schedule. And our schedule, obviously, for 2021 has already been out there. And it's ranked as one of the most difficult in the country, like it is every single year that I've been here. So, but that's what you got to do. And you just take them one at a time. But that's where we are. That's what we expect, and that's what our players are believing for and working for every single day.
Tom Allen, thank you so much. Good luck. I'd break it down on Big Ten champs, but I know what you're going to say at the end of this interview. You say it at the end of every interview. So you go ahead. The floor is yours.
Well, I appreciate it, Andy. It's great being on your show. LEO.